There are still a lot of details to be worked out around Australia's deal to secure the COVID-19 vaccine that's being developed by Oxford University. The first, of course, is whether this vaccine will prove to be safe and effective. Then there's the issue of how we manufacture 25 million doses here in Australia. The news of the Australian deal comes as the World Health Organization warns against so-called vaccine nationalism, urging rich countries to share their resources so everyone can get access to a vaccine when it becomes available. I'm joined now by Jane Holton, who's the chair of CEPI. CEPI is the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovations. Jane Holton is also a member of the Australian Government's COVID-19 Coordination Commission. Jane Holton, welcome back to Breakfast.
Morning, Fran.
Jane Holton, our government signed a letter of intent now with the British company AstraZeneca to supply the Oxford Uni vaccine candidate to Australia. What does that letter of intent commit to exactly, and what's yet to be worked out? Do you have an understanding of that?
Well, I mean, obviously I haven't seen that letter of intent, Fran, but I'm aware of the Prime Minister's announcement, and I think it's a very welcome development that Australia, should this vaccine be successful, would get priority access and the capacity to manufacture it right here at home.
We were speaking to the Science Minister, Industry Minister Karen Andrews, about Australia's capacity to manufacture a little earlier, and she said she was talking at the moment with CSL and the CSIRO about trying to work out how to produce this vaccine to scale. What capacity does Australia have at the moment to produce millions of doses of a vaccine? Do you have a sense of that?
Well, certainly we are in a very privileged position here in Australia. There are about 20 countries around the world that actually can manufacture vaccine at scale. And of course, it does depend a little on the type of vaccine that proves successful. But my understanding is that this particular vaccine, that CSL would have a capacity, now they'd have to do some work, obviously, but they would have a capacity to manufacture it right here. And I think we all know that the Melbourne facilities are world leading. So that's great news for all of us.
CSL says, quote, there are a number of technical issues to work through and discussions are ongoing. What would the technical complications be?
Vaccines are actually quite hard to make, Fran, and I mean, I think we all just assume because we go and have our flu shot or whatever that this is something that just proceeds in the normal course of business. But there's lots of science that goes into producing vaccines and even making sure that the facilities are able to actually produce the particular vaccine, which in this case is based on the adenovirus. So there's a lot of process science engineering that goes into making a vaccine. And as you know, CSL have been working with University of Queensland now for some months. Similar sort of work would have to go on with University of Oxford and with AstraZeneca in order for CSL to actually undertake manufacture of this vaccine.
Mm. Who do you think should get a vaccine first?
So the WHO, as the kind of organisation who has a global view of this, are working on priorities, but obviously in every country it'll be different. But I think everyone would understand, we see who's dying at the moment, so older people clearly will need to be a priority. We also know that our healthcare workers are so important to us in giving us exactly what we need, which is protection at times like this. So I'd say elderly people, people who are immune compromised, first responders, and particularly our healthcare workforce will be the first people we should be actually giving a vaccine to.
As your role with CEPI, you've got a front row seat on all of this. The United States, we know, already has signed 6 vaccine deals. Britain has done 5 of them. Japan signed 3. Is Australia playing catch up? Are we behind?
Well, I mean, let's be clear. There's probably about 8 countries or groups of countries that we know of that have signed deals. We don't really know what China's up to. Or the
Brazil has signed. Germany has signed.
Yes, that's right. But these are early deals, and Australia is right in there now, and I'm delighted about that. I think it's where we need to be. We do have the advantage of CSL onshore, and we need to be leveraging that capacity right now.
Were we behind? Are we playing catch-up?
Well, I think all these conversations have been going on for some time, behind closed doors, Fran. Mm-hmm. So the fact we've now got visibility of it, I think, is great.
What are the implications of this deal, if any, for the, for instance, the University of Queensland research, which CSL is tied to, you mentioned? Does this arrangement limit our ability to invest more in that vaccine? And should Australia be putting a lot more now than $5 million, which it's already directly contributed to the University of Queensland vaccine?
Well, I mean, the University of Queensland vaccine continues to be unbelievably important. And certainly they're not telling me that at the moment they'd need more money for the work on that vaccine. We're working as CEPI very closely with them and with CSL. So what we need to do is have as many candidates that succeed as we can. Because if you think about it, there are different needs all around the world in terms of what's going to work, we think, for particular groups. And also, of course, getting vaccine to some people in the world, the geographical challenges of that are significant.
Yeah.
So the University of Queensland vaccine will be just as important.
So should an Australian government be putting more than 5 million? I mean, if you look at how it compares to what other countries are doing, Germany, I mentioned earlier, they've actually paid something like 300 million euros to buy a share in the company in Germany that's working on a vaccine. Should we be putting in more money?
Well, I think the government's actually investing quite wisely, Fran. I mean, what they've done is, in this announcement, they have actually anticipated a number of the needs we would have to actually roll out a vaccine. As I've said, we at CEPI and others have been working with the University of Queensland, and I think that work is going well. So, the government has invested significant money in research, in thinking about now the supply chain. So I'm not uncomfortable with where those funds are being directed, but I am keen to ensure is that once we get a vaccine, and this is why I think the other part of their announcement is so important in relation to supply of needles, for example, because it's not just a question of saying, Eureka, we now have a vaccine, we have to get it to people, Fran, and then we have to give it to them. So that's really important as well.
And just before I leave the investment, are you happy with the level of investment from Australia into CEPI?
Oh, well, Fran, it goes without saying that I'll take any additional funding that I can get. So, of course, I would be delighted if there was a greater level of investment, particularly as we think about protecting not just ourselves. And I think you mentioned vaccine nationalism. We have to think about the Pacific and our neighbours here as well.
Yeah, just on that, we're speaking with Jane Halton. She's the chair of CEPI. Australia has secured, so far we know, the rights to 25 million doses of the Oxford Uni vaccine, which would not be enough to share with our neighbours around the region, particularly the Pacific countries. Does Australia have an obligation to help out these countries?
Well, I certainly think, and many of your listeners would know, that we have long-standing relations with the Pacific, and there are others who would choose to or try to supplant us in those relationships. So I think it's important that we focus not just on our domestic needs, but we do think about the region, and I think that is something that we really do need to step up on.
The director of the WHO last night warned we need to prevent vaccine nationalism. How worried is the WHO, but how worried is CEPI that rich countries are going to keep their vaccines, research and resources to themselves?
Well, very. And in fact, Fran, I think I first talked to you about vaccine nationalism months ago. This is one of the reasons why we are working with Gavi on something we call the COVAX facility, which has a portfolio of up to 9 at the moment potential vaccines in it. And the objective is to ensure equitable access to any of those vaccines that succeed, because while any country in the world has this virus, we actually still all have it. And targeting those groups we just talked about, they're vulnerable. If we target those vulnerable 2 billion people around the world, we'll bring this pandemic to an end much more quickly.
And Jane Halton, can I just ask you more broadly, because you are a member of the government's COVID-19 Coordination Commission, so you're across very much what's going on in this country. And for many years, you were the Secretary of the Department of Health and Ageing. On the issue of aged care, have the revelations about the exposure aged care has to this virus and the preparedness of the sector to deal with it, given what you would have seen and presided over, I suppose, as the Secretary of the Department, has it come as any surprise to you?
Well, Fran, you're right. I mean, I had that role for a long time. It's quite a while ago now, of course. But I also am the chair of the Council on the Ageing for Australia. And I am very concerned that we make sure that our aged care services are as prepared as they can be. I really welcome the standing up of these joint coordination units on a state and territory basis. We need to make sure that the people who are most vulnerable in our community are protected.
And
there are some services that are doing extremely well, and I think we should acknowledge the hard work of aged care and those workers. But I think we could have done better in terms of infection control in some of those services, and very sadly, we're seeing the consequence of that now. Now, to be fair, this virus is insidious. it sneaks in places, and no one should let their guard down. But I do think it's regrettable what we've seen in a number of services, in particularly in Victoria.
But just on that, and no one in any, well, certainly I'm not putting any blame on the workforce in these places, but no. You seem to be singling out the actual providers. Is this an issue for the providers, or is federal oversight not been enough? Were we not ready for this? You're all about epidemic preparedness. Were we not prepared?
Well, I have been worried, Fran, that everyone have access to everything from personal protective equipment, but also the knowledge. And I do think that for many people, they have been caught potentially on the back foot. Now, the Royal Commission has been looking at this. I do think that the effort, as I've said, that we've seen through the establishment of these joint coordination groups is very, very welcome. And I think that will make a genuine difference.
Jane Holton, thanks for joining us.
That was my pleasure, Fran.
Jane Holton is the chair of CEPI, the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovations, and a member of the government's COVID-19 Coordination Commission.